makes it clear now from a response planning standpoint of what to plan to is the RPS. I mean, that essentially was the missing piece here, and it's set, and it's at the 15%, and hopefully the straw man, and I don't know if you're here for the other meeting that's being built out, will show the methodology now that's going to be used on how to implement or achieve that standard, and that methodology, I think, would spill over. But the rest of this, the prevention measures and stuff, obviously are, I mean, this is groundwork for what we would otherwise do via the contingency and prevention plan right now. I mean, it's these prevention elements that would flow out of this then would be part of a prevention plan under a normal contingency plan review process, and as well as these other elements would be would contribute then on top of the things we talked about from the Dunbar settlement right now to complete the whole plan. The way, I mean, that's my take on it.
So in terms of the this work group or this portion of the work group process, what I'm hearing you say is that really with the setting by SB 273 of a 15% standard, the work group can basically report that what the railroad is undertaking and going through the standard contingency plan review process with DEC satisfies what we need to do, and I guess
instead of us meeting an internal threshold that we set for ourselves, we're meeting a threshold that's established in statute and regulation that's consistent with other thresholds that the department has set for other industries.
So in terms of this task force's work, I guess that part of our question is what else needs to be done, and I hear you saying you're addressing through a process that culminates in December those answers. Is that right? Ken, do you want to come to the table?
Yeah, I think what Larry Piper was saying and Larry's saying is, you know, that our current contingency plan statutes and regulations for the bulk part can be translated directly to the railroad, and they already have in both cases. You know, the plan that they're operating under right now is a voluntary plan. DEC reviewed that, made a lot of comments over there. But the part that is left unsettled is the prevention aspect. And we're talking right now that you're really not going to have the prevention of aspect of this risk assessment outlined until probably, you know, the final report is due or somewhere between October and end of December. And to me, that's the missing part of the report that we're required to provide to the legislators, is that, you know, we could, right now, I think we could say, we agree that the Article 1, which is response, the emergency response plan, and the response parts of Article 3 and environmental sensitivity and all that, you know, let's just adopt those and apply those to the railroad. But that doesn't hold true for the prevention part of the contingency plan aspect as to what should be required to, that the railroad should be required to adhere to and put in some language in the regulations that, you know, okay, they must apply to, they must adhere to, you know, the federal over that industry standards, railroad standards. Because I guess my take on this is that, you know, you'll have the risk assessment by the railroad.
Excuse me.
But unless that's addressed and translated into regulation form and so forth on there, you know, that doesn't, because it's strictly voluntary, it doesn't make the railroad responsible to the state for any prevention aspect. Unless they're, because that's a whole new arena and completely different from existing facilities and from the vessel side of the hull, you know, so that's really not addressed. So my bottom line is, I'm just saying, you know, that the prevention part of the regulation that we're trying to basically establish here for the railroad needs to be addressed in some shape or form, is that if nothing else, you're going to have to regulate things that the state adopts or the railroad has to adopt all the prevention measures outlined in the plan or, you know, but and maybe all of them in there will or not, we don't know, you know, what degree of here is would be required if it's necessary from the report.
The contingency plan that's on the books right now is a contingency and prevention plan, and this is would be essential groundwork to doing the prevention review and incorporating it into the prevention plan. So some of that would be sorted out, whether or not there would be supplementing regs necessary to support a plan review like that or not. I'm not sure, but in any case, we probably couldn't determine that until further down the road. So I'm just wondering, in terms from the task force, is what the expectations are now. The task force would do if this report's coming out in December, and if the methodology for the response plan stand for it, which the task force is wrestling with via the straw man, comes out, that piece is in place, and then if upon going through a normal contingency plan review, these other issues are worked out, and the information isn't available December 1 anyhow. I think the chore here is then what can the task force do that wouldn't be redundant or different or apart from the risk assessment process, which is underway, and I'm not seeing anything.
And that was the question I was trying to get at, too, sort of what can we do prior to that December 31st? You indicated a partial in October.
Right, we'll probably have the track portion done by then.
Okay, but that's only part of the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Ken?
Well, the other part of what I was saying is that I was sure that, you know, this task force here and our report to the legislature and what it's called is recommendations on it. And later on, if depending upon what the legislature's path as law, and unless it's, you know, for the sake of argument, that they're going to say, okay, the railroads and all those non-tank vessels have to have it. Well, then, you know, the details of what is going to be regulations is to be worked out, the regulations is not possible. So the draft and have a public review, and at that time, you will have the risk assessment done by the railroads. So every, the state and everybody will have a few cents for it to dissect that report and say, okay, this is what we should take out of that risk assessment and put into regulation or not put the regulation on. So if nothing else, all this task force needs to do is says, okay, the task force will have to safely use the risk assessment provided to the railroad as a basis for evaluating and determining prevention standards, prevention requirements, and regulations. So it's probably not necessary that all the details be worked out between now and the task force. I don't think that's the charge of the task force to work out all the details. But what's the process going to be for determining how to meet the RPS? And basically what we, you know, basically think that current process right now in place essentially is already taking care of that.
Well, the task force does have to come up with any recommendations for statutory change and or for regulations, but in terms of the current current status, I guess if task force members are comfortable in a statement that we'd use the risk assessment as the basis, and basically that then requires DEC to do the rulemaking based on the risk assessment, that may be as far as we can go pending the completion of the risk assessment.
Yeah, Ernie Pay from the rail. Well, that raises another issue. I don't know what things may or may not go into regulation, but the kinds of things that you look at in evaluating rail safety are all currently subject to federal regulation. I mean, this is an authority that the federal government has reserved for itself on railroads operating in interstate commerce. So, I mean, the kinds of things about coupler height, side bearing clearance, spring types, things like that are all governed by, those car issues are all governed by existing federal regulation or industry standards that member railroads have to follow. tie and fastener conditions, cant in the rail, gauge variances, things like that. That's all, again, covered in under the FRA and federal DOT regs.
Susan Harvey?
Just so I heard the dates correctly, so the final report will be done at the end of the year,
yeah.
December 31st. Will there be some milestones along the way? Our report is due December 1st to the legislature that we could get preliminary findings from rail sciences such that we could incorporate some of the major findings.
Well, I think, as I said, I think the track portion will be done for sure in October. The shop and operating practices will be done by the end of the year.
I guess just to follow up, I propose that we have some kind of interim time frame in which we could get some more significant findings and some, at least a draft report to DEC into the task force so that we can see the progress that's being made on the risk assessment and be able to incorporate any of the more significant findings into our report as of December 1st with a follow-up more formal report.
I'll give you whatever I have when I have it, but we're dealing with a lot of different elements of it right now, and it's driven by the weather. It's driven in part by rail sciences schedule as well, so they have their deadlines and they have to meet them.
Okay, and a follow-up question in terms of upgrading your contingency plan to include not only the prevention aspects that you're going to learn from the rail sciences, but the response issues that you've learned and the enhancements from your more recent build. What is the time frame for you actually to upgrade this contingency plan and get something more formal to us?
Well, it depends on if that may be decided by the legislature. I don't know. If there's a time frame that the legislature decides, if this is all on any follow-up to SB 73, that'll govern when it happens.
Okay, maybe I'll phrase it a little differently. Do you have an internal time schedule or program to upgrade your contingency plan to do the response end or the prevention end, or are you waiting for the legislature to force you to a particular schedule?
No, we're planning to have it done. When we started last September, we were planning to have it done by this September, but obviously other events took over, so we should be done probably by the middle of the summer.
Middle of next summer?
Yeah, well, whether that meets what the state may require in terms of what the plan is, I don't know. I mean, as I said, our objective was to build a plan that was revised and improved and met the requirements that we felt we had, and now there's another one, and we'll meet those as we go. But we're looking to have it by the middle of summer next year, all tied up.
Okay, so you currently have a schedule of events that gets you to a revised contingency plan, whether we get this legislation or not, by next summer?
Yeah, whether the legislation exists or not, we're trying to be in place by next summer.
Okay. If you could send that schedule over to us, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, to the extent that we can synchronize the schedule that might come out of any recommendations from the task force and where you are, it makes it easier to achieve that schedule.
Right. Larry Beecher, DEC. Yeah, that's what I'm still trying to piece together here in terms of the program that the railroad has here and the intent to meet the existing requirements anyhow. The fact of the matter, from a task force perspective, we have a cutoff date pretty much of November 1 in terms of having, matter of fact, that's a difficult one. I would say that the cutoff for the task force to further consider any findings would be the date of the last scheduled task force meeting, which I believe is anticipated to be in October, such that the report writing can commence at the 1st of November and be completed by December 1st.
And we were looking at the last week of October as the likely task force
right.
meeting date.
And so, again, for the task force to incorporate whatever partial findings or whatever might be available, it would be whatever's available at that point in time, and it would be, we'd have to introduce it at the task force, probably at the last opportunity the task force will have to meet before then, Brian was going forth and putting the report together to meet the deadline. So again, I'm just trying to wrestle with exactly, do we need any further supplementary work group sessions, or what more specifically can the task force possibly do in view of what's already underway here? And I'm not seeing that there's a lot of things that the task force can take on. I don't think the task force has a wherewithal to dive in or duplicate or get a parallel effort to the risk assessment going at all. I mean, this needs to be completed and the results used, but it would seem that the if the intent here is to complete the information necessary to do the prevention measures and come up with a strategy for meeting the response planning standard, and if the task force produces the methodology on how you're supposed to meet a 15% thing for all parties, that the pieces are in place then to wrap it up. I mean, I'm not sure we can do much more, I guess, is where I'm at.
Well, my understanding from that whole discussion at the end of the legislative session was the legislature wanted to know what impact this was going to have on the various industries involved, and if there were a standard, how they were going to meet it. And I think I can give you a pretty good picture of the methodology that goes into doing that from the railroads end.
One of the other issues the legislature was interested in is cost and what additional this may impose. And if I heard you correctly, you're doing this sort of regardless of 273, this is the process the railroad was going through. The only difference is you have a 15% target now, but the rest of all the safety and issues was something you'd already embarked upon post-Dunbar, is that correct?
Right. And the other thing is a lot of the costs that the railroad has are not solely allocated to spill response and prevention. You know, if we develop a standard for wedge rise in tank car trucks, because there isn't one under AAR or FRA rules, but we decide that that's in the best interest of the business to do it, that's a fairly technical aspect of it, and those inspections that are related to wedge rise and those kinds of things show up in our operating and maintenance budget anyway. So I don't think I can directly tie them in there. I mean, for us, the improvements that the focus of the improvements that we're looking at here are not just for prevention and response. They're bottom line issues for the Alaska Railroad, and that's where they all come together.
Larry Dietrich again, and I would have to say that the scope of what the railroad has included in the risk assessment far and away exceeds the dialogue that was held during the spring session. I mean, there was concern, but the primary concerns was focused on the spill response issues, and clearly this is goes well beyond that. I mean, as this shows, the spill response is one portion of really a system-wide analysis that's being done here. The other thing I think that Ernie mentioned a minute ago that also needs to be sorted out that would be done in conjunction with the normal sea plan review, there are potential railroad intertanko issues here. And I'm not sure where things are with regard to, like I say, if the Federal Railway Administration has standards and stuff, to what extent the state may or may not be able to set a standard that would exceed that or whatever is something that, would have to be sorted out down the road. So, all of that is to say that there's quite a bit of work here in terms of the follow-up that would be done that we would normally do in a C-plan review process when this information is available. But clearly there are the standards for prevention that might be in a prevention plan for the railroad under state law, we would have to sort out the railroad intertank issues. I mean, there may be some things there that we want, although I can't think what they might be, but there is a potential that they could be in conflict with a federal requirement. If we desire to change it, we may not be able to do so anyhow.
I think we'll go back a little bit here. Okay. Ernie,
I'd say your name, Joe.
Oh, Joe there, did you point out which of your points are unique or things that you're doing that are beyond the scope of federal railroad supply?
Well, a couple of things. I could go down the list. Tie and fastener conditioning curves. There's no specific federal standard for tie and fastener conditions in curves themselves. It's tie and fastener conditions in general. But as a practical matter, your highest risk is this in areas of curvature. 80% of derailments in the United States occur with some degree of curvature involved. And so that's something that we would take beyond requirements because of the amount of curvature and grade that we have on the Alaska Railroad. Differential plate cutting, there's no FRA standard for differential plate cutting, but we know that it's a significant contributor to rail cant that can lead to other problems. Rail lubrication is not, there's no federal standard for rail lubrication. Wear conditions, there is. Flaw detection, there are, related to bolt brakes and things like that. Track geometry is all federally regulated. There are standards all within that the FRA requires us to have. Rail grinding is just a maintenance issue. All the turnout issues, those are where you come off onto a switch, all those are federally regulated. Track drainage is federally regulated. Bridges and trestles are regulated not only by FRA, but also OSHA and some other federal authorities. Coupler height, yes. Wedge rise, no. Spring types, yes. Side bearing clearance, yes. Wheels, yes. Outlets and valves, yes. Center bowl lubrication, yes. The frequency, no. Air and hand brakes, yes. All the lighting, the horns and whistles, the truck tripes, the air brakes, those are all federally regulated. The SD70 MAC failure patterns and diagnostics, this is a software issue with our new locomotives that we've been trying to diagnose. The mechanical practices are all governed by FRA and AAR. All the operating issues are very much, and have been for a long time, been that was the basis of FRA type of issues. And train dynamics are not. That's the science end of it, and that's one of the places that rail science has really taken things to the next dimension. When I talk about on number five, yellow flag defect levels, yellow flag is what in the industry we refer to things that are on those track geometry inspections. Trick what's called a yellow flag. It doesn't mean you have a defect, but you're close to defect levels. The conditions of the spirals, that's the entry and the exit of a curve where you have a constantly changing radius. Those are federally regulated. Rock and roll areas, that's what's called harmonic rock, and that's directly related to where your joints are and how far apart you space them, which is subject to FRA inspection. Track twists and warp, also part of FRA standards. Highway crossing protection issues, that's all federally regulated. And emissions testing is federally regulated.
Joe LeBeau again. Some follow-up questions here. Regarding, I may not have the correct railroad terminology here, but you have a foundation that you build for the track. That's kind of the footprint of the track. And then you put valves on top of your foundation. That ties to the balance. And that kind of helps control the stability of the tracks in the road depth. The foundation was, for the most part, was it constructed with specification material?
Larry Piper, the road bed itself was built between 1903 to 1923 with areas cut out or changed over the years. During, before World War II, very little. In the early part of the 50s, there was a fair amount of road bed change. The nice thing about it, the bad thing about the road bed is it's old. The good thing about the road bed is that it's old. In a lot of places, particularly up in near Fairbanks, for example, permafrost, which which normally you don't like. It causes sags and dips, but what that's meant is that over 60 or 70 years, you've put gravel onto there as the permafrost is gone, and now we have a roadbed of good gravel that may be 15, 18 feet thick. So you don't want to mess with the roadbed, basically.
Midsummer or whatever, but I mean, that would be the third thing that I think
and the prevention, the other things are all going to be dependent then on the outputs from the risk assessment project. So endorsing those three things, which the work group would basically be saying, say, stay on track. But to stay on track with the risk assessment, complete the methodology, and complete the process of going through the C plan contingency and prevention plan review process meets the mission of what we're doing. I mean, the alternative to that would be if the railroad didn't have the risk assessment process, and then the task force was in the position that
we do
going through this, and that would be a very fundamentally a very large job.
Well, for the five task force members who are here, is that three or 4 point, that is endorsing the risk assessment, recommending it follow through to completion. Second, completing the RPS methodology with the aspects that are actually, you know, part of the ongoing work of the committee. And third and fourth, going through the C plan and prevention plan review under the rigor of existing law. Is that a set of recommendations from the work group level that folks are comfortable with recommending to the full task force, with the caveat that we'd have a review at the late October meeting of where the railroad is and whether we can go any further? Everybody okay on that?
Brian, does that mean that the work group here would endorse the full regulation of the railroad under the existing law?
I think we're looking at going through the contingency plan and prevention plan review, subject to the 15, you know, that we're dealing with the 15% response planning. That is what we're saying, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Again, more like the regulated, existing regulated industries than the group of currently unregulated.
Yeah, we
and that's really consistent with what we're saying during the legislative session.
We're going to meet it, you know. The RSB 73 did was put a consensus number on the threshold of 15%, so we'll meet that one. No, but absent SB 273, we would have an oil spill prevention and contingency plan that mirrored those of regulated industry. That was what our commitment was in December. We'll follow through on it regardless of the outcome.
Well, with that, is there anything else that we as a work group of the task force need to do today? I think for Friday's meeting, that really also addresses any railroad prevention issues for Friday. We'll have to clear that with the prevention chairs, but if they're comfortable with it, then we'd focus just on marine issues on Friday.
Okay.
Any final comments, Larry?
Larry Dietrich, I would just ask Ernie if he saw any need then to include, consider where we are with the risk assessment process. Is there any need then to have any railroad prevention issues on the agenda for Friday, or can we wait on stay on the course that we've laid out here and let it evolve and generate, or can we focus? Are you all comfortable if we focus on non-tank vessels then for that session?
If I'm comfortable with that, I would check with the chair. Is Gene the chair of that?
That's right. And the prevention is Eric Britton, Michael Hara, and
all of this would have to be much.
Yeah.
Yes, it would.
Now that I know that it's Mike and Eric, I think I know where to go. But we're available.
Okay,
it is.
Okay. Anything else before we adjourn? Sorry, you had your hand up.
No, I'm done.
Okay. Then we're all done. We have a couple of
somebody could fax me those documents at 586-1987, I'd appreciate it.